them to fly away. We're a group of agents from Outlander Travel who get together every week to talk about all things travel. Whether you've been listening for a while or just tuning in, we're happy you found us. We truly believe that travel has the power to change the world, and we want to inspire others to come along with us. We chat about destinations, current events, our favorite experiences, and lots more. We'd love to hear your feedback and ideas for topics, so be sure to connect with us on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. Travel is more than the seeing of sights. It is a change that goes on deep and permanent in the ideas of living. Today is a big day in the life of our podcast. She is 200 episodes old. When we were thinking about how to celebrate such an occasion, we tossed a lot of ideas around, trying to find the perfect way to honor not only our podcast, but you, our listeners. Sandy, of course, thought all of us running a 200-mile relay race to Pittsburgh would be awesome. Lindsay thought that a marathon 200 hours at Disney World while we podcasted live would be just the ticket. Donna and I suggested singing 200 bottles of beer on the wall during the podcast while drinking 200 bottles of craft beer. That would be the absolute best way to celebrate. And Laura suggested a camp out on a 200-acre farm with 200 of our listeners on the 200th day of the year to celebrate adventure travel. And that would be the hands down, the surefire, memorable way to commemorate our 200th episode. But after much bantering and discussion, we all knew the way to honor not only the podcast, but those of you who have loyally shared this podcast journey with us, was to let you sit around with us as we share the reasons any of us travel. It changes us. It makes us better. It humbles us. It inspires us. And hopefully in the process, we make the world a better place. Because as we have discovered and reaffirmed, you never really travel alone. The world is full of friends waiting to get to know you. So with that, let's jump in.
Oh, I have goosebumps.
I know. That would be, Laura wrote that, by the way, credit where credit is due. And that would be cheesy if it weren't completely true. I think we all believe that completely, 100% in our hearts. So let's talk. I mean, this is something we could probably talk about this all night. So for Heidi's sake, editing this, we won't do that. So let us try to keep our stories brief and meaningful and just pull out the essence of the stories. But let's talk about some ways that travel has changed you. And Donna, I want to start with you because we don't get to hear from you as much because we all talk really loud. So,
well, you know, I never understood that whole term breathtaking until I went to Alaska. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being a Texas girl, you know, I've left the heat of Texas summer and went up to Alaska in August. And of course, you know, it was freezing. And so I'm wearing a heavy coat and sweaters and all that kind of stuff when I go up there. And on my way there, they're like, oh, Seattle's in the middle of a drought. And I look out and everything is green. I'm like, y'all don't know what a drought is. Anyway, that's a side note. So I get up to Alaska. And, you know, at the time I was waking up with the sunrise and everything, but I didn't realize that the sunrise is a little earlier up there. Mm-hmm. So at 5:30 in the morning, the sun comes streaming through the window and I'm wide awake, ready to go, and nobody else is awake. And so I'm actually was staying at someone's house and I come out into the living room and they have this giant, you know, picture window. And you can see the mountains in the distance, and they're covered in snow. And it just, it literally took my breath away. Mm-hmm. That it was just so awe-inspiring. There's just no other feeling. And, I mean, the house was quiet because everybody was still asleep. And it was just this mountain. And it was just, I mean, absolutely amazing. And on that same trip, I got to sit outside in the hot tub while it was snowing.
In August? Where in Alaska were you?
I was in Juneau.
Really?
In Sitka. And yeah, it started snowing and there were people out because they had 3 days of sunshine, which, you know, I'm from South Texas. They had 3 days of sunshine and they were water skiing in the Bay of Alaska.
I was going to say, you were up there in your heavy coat, but they were all wearing shorts, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I really got to see how other people really lived and just the majesty of Alaska. And so it's one of those things that it's just always been with me ever since that. And I was a senior in high school.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, if I can piggyback on that a little bit, I have sort of a story about someone else and then me, which is we had an exchange student from Norway when I was in high school, when I was a junior in high school. And the first thing we did, she landed, she unpacked her bags, and then we had her pack up again, and we went to a family wedding in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. And so we fly into Chicago and we drive this girl out to Champaign Urbana, and she's looking around, and I had never been to Norway at the time. I didn't know much about Norway at all. And she's looking around awestruck by how flat everything is. She's like, I cannot believe how flat this is. It's beautiful. And we're looking out the window going, it's what?
It's what?
It's beautiful.
Like,
okay.
You can see 5 miles down the road.
Yeah. I mean, this is the most boring drive ever. I can't believe that you're finding beauty in this. And then, of course, we went to visit her in Alaska, you know, 5 or 6 years, I mean, in Alaska, yeah. sorry, in Norway, 5 or 6 years later. And she took us out on the fjord that was in her backyard.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, I still don't see how you found Illinois beautiful. I mean, you grew up with this, but she's so used to it.
I tell people this all the time. My friends think I'm crazy, but whenever they talk about like a beautiful beach or something like that, I'm like, every place is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Every place is beautiful. You just have to look at it, because like one of the most boring, my kids hate it when we drive to Pittsburgh. And we go through West Virginia, because West Virginia takes the longest. It's half of our drive we're in West Virginia because of the route we go. And I don't really like stopping anywhere. I feel like it's all kind of backwards or whatever. But it's the most gorgeous place. It is, I mean, the mountains are gorgeous. Sometimes we're driving through the mountains and we're in the clouds. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we go through New River Gorge, which is part of the national park. But you can also, it's a great place to stop. It has the best, like, dog walk place. I mean, it's gorgeous. You just have to appreciate how gorgeous. We go through this one part, Somerville, where there's this lake. The lake is the bluest water you've ever seen. I mean, it's all, you know, stuff can be in your backyard and you don't know it, but sometimes.
It really helps, too, when you can see your surroundings from someone else's eyes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what, you know, the double-edged gift of travel, not only when you go somewhere else, but I'm getting ready to have visitors, and you know, we always get to experience and do so many things when people come visit.
Yeah.
And take that ferry ride that we've taken about a million times and think, ah, it's just a ferry ride. But when, you know, when I'm gone a long way, and I've gone for a long time and far away, seeing beautiful places all over the world, and I come home and it still knocks the breath out of me. Mm-hmm. Looking at it, because you just don't appreciate it as much, I don't think, until you're
away from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or exposed to someone else's viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, when I go home to Texas, you know, it smells different. Mm-hmm. The sky is bigger in Texas, and it just, it feels right, because that's my home.
That's a car commercial.
So, Laura, do you want to tell us one of your stories? I bet you do.
Oh, I have a lot of different ones, some happy, some sad, but the one I was thinking about when Donna was talking was when I got to travel to Switzerland in Lucerne. It was back, I think, in around 86, 87, somewhere around that. I actually went with a Parks and Recreation musical touring group.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was little, I've been a big reader. I'm the kind of kid who would go to the library and come out with like 14 books and then go back 2 days later because I'd read them all. And I know a lot of people who now like to go on tours because they want to see Elvis's home, or they want, you know, they want to see a place that they, you know, have read about, or a star that they like kind of come alive. Well, for me, being in Lucerne and waking up and hearing the cowbells, mm-hmm. I could just imagine being Heidi.
You mean Heidi, our engineer?
Asleep, and you heard them. You heard that clanking. And, you know, it's like, it was just like I imagined. And they know that old, maybe it was a Shirley Temple movie of Heidi, mm-hmm. you know, and it was like Heidi had come to life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go out and you look, and there's those same beautiful mountains around you. And I can close my eyes right now, you know, and be right there. That beautiful lake, you know, the cowbells. It was, you know, this picture perfect little village almost. And Lucerne's not a village, but up where we were and the chalets that we were in, it sure felt like Heidi's Switzerland to me. You know, up in the Alps kind mm-hmm. of thing. I could hear grandfather calling, and, you know, so it brought to life in a 3D visceral way, you know, that story for me.
Yeah. I'll piggyback on that one too. I think, and this is a little bit like hearing your story and then bringing up Pittsburgh. So I apologize for it. But one of the things that was magical about Universal Studios to me, that I'm relating to your story, is I felt like I walked into a book. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, they feel like they're walking into the movie, which I guess in theory they are. But when you enter one of the Harry Potter worlds there, Diagon Alley or whatever, I actually cried when I walked into Diagon Alley, because I really felt like I was seeing a place that I would never get to see, that was in a book that I had imagined. And I had my own interpretation, although it honestly closely matched what ended up being on the movie screen. But you know, as much as I love London and I go to London a lot, I knew that I would never see that. Like that was a magical London that didn't really exist. So no matter how many times I went to London, I would never see that. And here was this opportunity that, granted, in this case, it's manufactured, but that feeling of walking into a book. And that's why when I travel, I try very hard to read a book that was set wherever I'm traveling right before I go. Right before I went to Hong Kong, I read The Piano Teacher, which is set in colonial Hong Kong. But still, a lot of the history there was so important. And it made my trip that much richer, because I had this fictional story that was told against the backdrop of the place I was visiting. And seeing the Stanley Park Cemetery and all those things, that was really brought to life.
Now, the flip side of that for me is 1996, not for pleasure. I went to Zaire to work with the Rwandan refugees after the Hutus and Tutsis were in the Civil War. And we flew into Kenya and flew from Kenya to Tanzania in a prop plane. First thing in the morning, four of us sitting on the floor of the plane. And they gave us these, like, chili, meaning the pilot, handed to us, warm Fantas and chili peanuts. And then we bounced through the air.
That sounds awesome. Wow.
But there was so much about that trip that I had friends time and time again, so they couldn't believe what I was going. I've been hot-natured ever since I was a baby, like, really hot-natured. And I went to Zaire in August. And when I got to the place that we were, and there was only three other people with me, because they divided up in different towns. The only thing they had for us to stay, first of all, we had to sleep under mosquito nets because malaria was rampant there. Mm-hmm. But all they had was wool blankets for us to sleep on.
Wow.
Then there's no electricity. At that time, Zaire had no running water, no electricity, no mail service, no phone service.
Wow.
So that's all there was to sleep in. And I slept well, you know. I think it's amazing when maybe this is for anybody who's considering going to someplace that they're scared of or pushing their limits or whatever, but it's, you know, like when you open yourself up to something, how the place that you're visiting will begin to, if you'll be open to it and what it has for you, it'll begin to meet your needs. But there were so many life-changing moments. I guess the two that I'll share here are one that one of the guys who went with me is from Texas, and he was supposed to be there to help continue to put a wing on a medical clinic. And so they were going to be pouring the foundation and with cement. Now, the lake, it was Lake Tanganyika, was 2 miles away. And all that they had was three plastic buckets that held about 10 gallons of water. So they'd have to walk with those three-gallon buckets that 2 miles away to get the water and back.
Wow.
And pour that little square cement and then start all over again.
Wow.
And I never complained about my coffee not being hot enough in the morning again.
Yeah.
The other thing was that I think we get all tied up about what if we can't speak the language. And I had an interpreter with me. He'd actually, his name was Burton. He had been a head school master in Burundi, which is right next to Rwanda. And he went to pick his family up from church, and everybody in the church was dead. Lost his whole family. His siblings, his mother, his children, his wife, were all dead. And he left Rwanda, and he was my interpreter. And the place that they decided to assign me was in the nutrition tent of the refugee camp. And there were a bunch of women there, all who had children, but some of the children didn't belong to the women who had them, because a lot of children with disabilities or with physical differences had been left by the side of the road, and other women had picked those children up and taken them in, kind of thing. But he was, for a while, he was interpreting for me, but he was the only man in the tent. And I just said to him, after about 3 or 4 days, just go stand over there. Because I could tell the women were hesitant around him. And he whispered to me, kind of, you know, if you don't need me, then they won't pay me. And I said, I'll come out every 15 minutes, and I'll wave my hands, and I'll nod my head, and we'll look like we're talking, and I'll tell them that I couldn't have done it without you. But, you know, I was in there for 2 and 3 hours. And we didn't speak much of the same language, and yet we understood each other perfectly. You know, and so I think when you go somewhere and your heart is willing, you know, it really changed me in that moment that we put so many walls up that makes us different from people. He won't understand me because of the, you know, she's gay and he's not. He's black and she's white. He's Jewish, and he's, you know, we just put all these walls up. And it was kind of right in that space that I thought, you know, for me, it was a, and I, you know, I've always been a pretty accepting human anyhow, but it was just a real, like, how many people do I not talk to because I think they want to understand where I've been? And really, the more we want to understand each other, the more we do. So those are my kind of big moments.
That's awesome. And I got nothing.
Yeah. Well, that, and my husband hadn't talked to me for 6 weeks because they had no phone. And when we got back to Kenya, they had to pull us out early because this is right before the fires were in Zaire. They had to pull us out early. And because they pulled us out early, they put together real quick 2 days of touring for us. And one of them was I got to go to the giraffe sanctuary where Out of Africa was made.
Mm-hmm.
Or about, you know, where the woman's land that movie was about. And they had this, like, big, like, 15-sided house, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
It has, like, a deck all the way around. And you could walk to the top of that deck, and they had, like, pellet machines. Except it was the, you know, it wasn't, like, rabbit pellets. They were, like, Snickers bars.
Giraffe-sized pellets.
There was only, you know, there was only the people who would, like, 4 of us there. It wasn't a day that they were open. They kind of got us in. And he said, you want to kiss a giraffe? and the other three were like, no. And I put the pellet in our mouth and walk up to the giraffe, and he did that. So we got 5 minutes to call our loved ones and tell them that we were okay. And my husband kept saying, I miss you. I love you. It's so good. I kissed a giraffe.
With tongue.
It was a real kiss.
That's awesome. That's a really
amazing.
I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Lindsay.
Because in so many ways, travel is, you know, you think of travel as a journey because you're journeying to a new destination, you're experiencing a new culture, but it's the journey to who you become.
Mm-hmm.
And those moments that kind of stand out, and you think about, I bet that's the best kiss you've ever had.
Yeah.
Certainly we'll never forget it.
Yeah.
I was hot, I was dirty, and I'd go back in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Just probably the happiest, most content, you know, I'd go back in a minute. And you know, first of all, you know, Africa is a continent and not a country.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there, and I've been returned to that continent, because my brother-in-law is from Senegal, West Africa, and I went to meet some of his family and to vacation with him, with my sister and niece and nephew. But there really is something about that continent.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whispering there that feels different. It's like you say, Texas feels different, Donna. You know, there's something about that continent that I know it's a long way away. I know it takes a long plane ride, but it will change you. And I guess you could say that about Italy and about Greece and about Paris. And but for me, it was like there was something there for me that I'd always been home or something.
I think there's a lot of places like that. And I thought it was just me, but I've spoken with clients who say the same thing about different places, that they go someplace and it's just home. And I think there's, you know, whatever, you know, spiritual connection you want to say that it is, whatever your metaphysical beliefs may be. You know, when I went to Greece, I felt very much at home right away, which is really weird because I couldn't speak the language. I'd never been there before. I actually only knew like some very basics about the ancient history of Greece. I didn't know that much about it, but I instantly felt like I was home there. And I thought, well, maybe it's just because the people were so friendly or whatever. But I felt that way about Italy too. And my family is from Italy, but I don't feel that way about France. You know, I don't feel that way about several other places that I visit where I still have a great time there. And I love being there. I'm going to go back again in a hot second, but it's not the same connection. I think it's great when you can find that connection, whether you can explain it or not. You can find that.
For some people, that is France.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. For some people,
I have a client who said, he wants to go back and stay there for like 4 weeks because he wants to move there. He said, it's a place, the place that I visited that I could breathe the easiest.
Mm-hmm. I cried when I got off the plane to Ireland the first time I went. I just felt, and I've never been more inspired or more creative than I was on that trip. And it was a school trip, so we were required to do some writing, but it just flowed out of me like water. Mm-hmm. We had a limerick contest one night, and I was on fire.
So. Ooh, did you save them?
You know,
are they naughty limericks?
Like very naughty limericks.
What was a lassie named Lindsay?
I have to say, though, I mean, because I studied Rome for a semester, and it was the whole culture of Rome, and so I was learning about the art and the architecture and all of those things, and all those things that the history of the area. And then right after I finished the class, I got to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you actually, because you've studied this art, you've studied this building, you studied this, but then you actually see it in real life. It really does drive it home to you, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember. This is the story that goes with this particular building, and it really emblazons itself in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. It sort of ties back to that whole book thing where it's like it's making something that seemed magical and unreal real. Whether it was real because you were studying it and it was real things that happened, or because it was a book that you read that that was real to you while you were reading it, to be able to make that real for real. I'm going to try and say real as many times as I can in 30 seconds.
On the flip side, when you've studied, you know, World War II and the whole rise of the Nazi regime, and then you're sitting there in the beer hall where Hitler actually got elected, it really does take that whole negativity, and it also drives it home.
Yeah.
When I went to Cuba with Fathom, I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, I'd done quite a bit of traveling at that point in my life already. I felt I'd been quite a few places. You know, for a girl who was so afraid to fly that she had to be brought on a plane by my husband leaving for Iraq, and I had to get on a plane for the first time to go see him. So from somebody who didn't even want to get on a plane to going everywhere. And by the time I got to that point in my life, I knew it was going to be different, but I didn't know how much it was going to change me. And one of the things I will never, ever, will never leave my mind is standing in the government store in Havana and looking at the things that they can buy there, and then looking around the border of the top of the building, on top of the room, is pictures of old Sears Roebucks of what it used to be. That trip touched my life in so many ways. I'm so grateful for that opportunity, and if I could go back and do it again, like you said, you know, Cuba wasn't on my radar as my ideal place to go, but I fell in love with the people. I fell in love with the music. I fell in love with the culture. And it was the, you know, and I'm not a tourist. I don't think I'm a little bit of tourist, but I've got a lot of traveler in me. But I don't think it was until that trip that I truly could say that I had a 100% cultural experience, that I had truly blessed with. It's such a moving, and once you have that, it's addicting. You want more. Mm-hmm. You want, I want to see more. You want to do more. Yeah. You want to go back.
Yes.
Yeah. And you want to go everywhere at the same time. It's like you want to go back and you want to go everywhere. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's, fear drives so much in people. And I'm going to say something that will sound a little bit rude, but that's me. But then not, which is, I hear people say, well, I'm afraid of flying, or my mom doesn't fly, or, you know, so we have to drive everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I feel sad. I'm not going to say it's pity, because that is, I mean, that's not really accurate. I feel sad because I just feel like they're missing so much because of this fear. I respect fear. I have lots of fears myself. I'm very glad that I'm not afraid to fly, because I would be missing out on so much. But it also, in hearing other people's fears, it makes me realize that even if that's something I fear a little bit, I need to take a risk or two. So I'm still not going to swim with hippos, but but I might dive with sharks at some point or something, because even though that sort of thing scares the devil out of me, I think that there's also, I mean, imagine forgetting the touristy in a shark cage kind of thing where they're chumming them, chumming the water. If swimming with sharks must be magical. I mean, scary, yes, I'm not gonna, but it must also be, that's a world you don't get to see. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not even your world. It's underwater. You don't breathe there. So for the ability to be able to do that, to explore places that technically you can't even really explore, it's magical in a way. And so I try to channel that sort of sadness that I feel when I hear somebody's fear is keeping them from doing something, and try to convince myself that maybe my fear needs to not stop me from doing something. And that's how I've ended up ziplining. That's how I've ended up doing many of the things that I've done that I've been afraid of, that I've gone on to do anyway.
And the fear never really, I mean, for me, because I had a true phobia of flight. And it wasn't even flight. It was sharks. This is so ridiculous. I thought that if I flew, the plane was going to go down, I was going to be eaten by sharks.
So I literally touched on your actual fear by accident in talking about the other fear.
Yeah, you totally did. But,
wow,
but
I saw.
I have to say that every time I fly, and I'm still just as scared as I was that first flight, but I know there's so much of a greater reward on the other side. You know, it's kind of, and it's funny to say that when you've flown like thousands of times. Mm-hmm. I was so terrified to fly, but it being able to push yourself out, you know, it sounds cheesy because it was in our intro for so long, but it push yourself outside of your comfort zone. That's what it's all about. Like, you know, and as much as I lovingly tease Sandy for dragging me to the top of a cliff and making me climb off, I will forever be grateful that I did that because I'll be forever grateful that I conquered my fear that on that first plane ride and got on, because if I hadn't, I wouldn't be who I am today, and I wouldn't have had any of the amazing experiences that I've gotten to have. So
I think this is all awesome. But I do think we need to recognize that some people can't, you know,
right, like absolutely
leave the country or, you know, get on that plane. So I think,
you know, there's so many places here that you can visit.
That's where I'm going. So. Well, there's places local to go. And there's also something to be said about the experience you're having with the people you're with and being in that moment. Mm-hmm. So like for my family, some of the best things we've done have been like family reunion type things, mm-hmm. where we've been with cousins and extended family and things like that. And so, to me, those are the ones that I look back on, and I'm glad that I've been able to do that for my kids. Like, you guys joke about me going to Pittsburgh all the time, but really I go to Pittsburgh all the time because that's where my family is. Mm-hmm. And I want my kids to be that connected to their cousins because I was that connected to my cousins. Mm-hmm. So, and we still travel together now, you know, so, you know, it's good. And I would trust sending any of my kids to any of my cousins to like stay the summer or, you know, something like that, just to kind of broaden their horizons a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and a few weeks ago, we had a guest, Robbie Hamida, who was talking about air travel. And at the end, he talked about something that has actually stuck with me for the weeks since we, but I'm sure it'll stick with me forever, which is something from that documentary that he brought up, where if you look out the window of an airplane when you're flying, mm-hmm. you are seeing in that instant, in that glance, as much or more than a person saw their whole lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a yeah. century ago, that ability to just glance out the window and see more in that second. So for me, if flying became an impossibility for me, my goal would then be to see everything that I possibly could in my air. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I want to make that circle as big as possible so that when somebody glances out the window of an airplane, they aren't seeing as much as I saw in my lifetime. I would make it an effort because yeah. you're right. And it, just this year, I'm starting to explore my own country more. And it's not that I've not traveled my country. I have seen quite a bit of it, but there's still places, national parks, because I don't camp.
It is amazing how different, them. Like if yeah. you are in LA and you're driving to Yosemite, mm-hmm. the changes of scenery you see just on that coastline, mm-hmm. are incredible. Mm-hmm. It's really incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, you would not know you're in the same state.
Yeah.
Or even in the same county in some cases. I mean, right. it changes very drastically.
Texas is the same way.
Yeah.
Texas is all Texas flat is and great. Boring. My friend from Norway would love it. Yeah, well, and California is a great example because literally you can see everything in that. I mean, it's kind of, Hawaii has the same thing. I think Hawaii has every ecological, of course you have to fly to Hawaii, but every ecological, what is it called?
Zone.
Like, yeah. Yeah, except for like Arctic and desert, or like sub-Saharan desert. Like yeah. the hottest and the coldest aren't in Hawaii, but everything else
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
So yeah, and California, I mean, one of the reasons, and I talk about this all the time, the food is so good in California.
Yeah.
And the reason the food is so good there is because they can grow everything.
Yeah.
They can, they have the livestock, they can grow everything. There's like maybe four foods on earth that they can't grow. It's literally because they have every sort of, you know, altitude and soil and everything. It's a magical place. So yeah, at least get outside of where of your town and your
that's
state.
It. When I was, and Lindsay and I started to kind of talk over each other, but that's one of the things I was going to say is that I have a friend of mine who, you know, I always tell people, I don't care what you believe. You know, I don't care if you believe in Mother Earth, Mother Turtle, the light, the dark, mm-hmm. God. I don't care what you call it. Just believe that there's something bigger than you out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a friend of mine who says, you know, you say that, but I don't believe there's anything. I don't believe in God. I don't believe there's anything. And about 4 or 5 years ago, he said, called me and he said, I want to let you know I'm going back on my decision. And I said, oh, really? What decision is that? And because there were many.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, I've decided there's got to be something bigger than us. And I said, and what brought about that revelation? He said, the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He said, I just came from the Grand Canyon. There's got to be something bigger than us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, that, you know, that, that's before I was traveling.
Yeah.
That's what I want to help create people's
lives. Yeah. I mean, if there's,
and even with the, even in helping to research trips for families for the Grand Canyon, you know, it's like one of the reasons I fall more and more in love with this profession every day is because, you know, we always tell our clients, you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, for me, you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like you're planning the Grand Canyon, and then you find out there's Antelope Canyon and Slot Canyon and Bryce Canyon. And, you know, in each one, and, you know, we picture the Grand Canyon everyone, as big, but kind of postcard big, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's that whole...
It's a lot bigger than that.
Yeah.
You know, there is one more beautiful place after the other that are canyons to be you know, rafted through and walked through and seen through and the way the light comes in and, you know, so it's all those pieces of the puzzle that we discover about our own country,
mm-hmm.
about yeah. the place we live in, and that how, you know, what we thought it was. And
you know, yeah, going back to where Donna started, Alaska for me was a wow moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm so excited I'm going back this year because it was immense. It was fantastic. You know, I mean, like it was so big and beautiful. And I knew when I went there that it was not a once in a lifetime trip for me. I was going back because yeah. I just loved it.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
So, and the Grand Canyon thing, I'll tell a story. And I think this was a life-changing moment for me. I was very fortunate to be able to travel to Europe when I was young. I was 13 and turned 14 when I was in Italy for the first time. It was my first trip. And that trip, I was such a 13, 14-year-old. I remember there were a few things I remember about it. One was I wore my Walkman the whole time. I was very much my daughter in that regard. I remember being angry that we were going because I was going to miss the Power Station concert. I was never going to have that opportunity again, which actually is true.
Yeah, I know. Right? never did get to see Power
never Station. To be fair, actually, we ended up going earlier than we thought. The Power Station concert, I think, got rescheduled, so I was able to see it actually. So worth it. But, and then I remember on the bus, my mom talking about the, because we were doing a bus tour, Perillo bus tour, and, my mom was talking about the Roman Forum and how she couldn't wait to see it. She had studied ancient history in college, and this was a lifetime dream for her. And we get out of the bus, and I've told this story before. We get out of the bus, I'm forced to get off the bus, and I go look, and I'm like, it's a bunch of rocks. I cannot believe that you dragged me off the bus. So I put my Walkman back on, sulked back onto the bus. You could see it happening.
Yeah.
So
fast
forward 3 years, I was 16 years old, and we took a trip to the West Coast, and we went to, I think we started in Los Angeles, we went to Disneyland, which I was super happy with, we went to Las Vegas, and we drove to the Grand Canyon as a day trip, and then we were going on to San Francisco from Las Vegas. We drove, you know, Las Vegas, it was a day trip, and we're in the car forever, because my dad, this was before GPS, so he had calculated how long it was to the Grand Canyon, and he was wrong. And he admitted he was wrong. He's like, this is taking way longer than I thought. He was very frustrated. We were all frustrated and tired. And we were like, we're spending a whole day doing this. And we weren't even sure. We were like, we're going to get back at like 1 o'clock in the morning. So this will be like a really quick stop. We'll finally get to the Grand Canyon. We stopped at Hoover Dam. And so I thank him to this day for sticking with it, because we get out of the car and I was just as grumpy as I was in Italy. And I'm like, we're going to look at this big hole in the ground. And I go over and look down and I thought, wow, this is amazing. And I don't know if it was just the mental shift between a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old, or if it was really just me having a better, to be fair, the Roman Forum is a bunch of rocks. If you don't know what you're looking at, it really does look like a bunch of rocks. Yeah. Whereas the Grand Canyon looks like a bunch of rocks that somebody hand carved into this immense, people say, well, I've seen it from the plains. I've seen it. No. No, you need to go walk right up to it and see how amazingly huge it is. Just right there in the United States, just this big hole in the ground that you can't even describe. You can see pictures of it, whatever, but you have not seen it until you've seen it. And that was a moment where I was like, maybe this whole travel thing actually is a little bit more than I was giving it credit for. I mean, it was definitely a teenage moment, but it still was a shift in maybe seeing things that I thought might be boring will be worth it, you know? And now I never leave on a trip and go, this is going to be super boring, which I used to do when I was a teenager. But I think it's been since then. It's like, whatever I'm being dragged along to do even if I didn't choose it, I'm going to have a great time. Yeah. It's going to be amazing. I'm going to find the amazing in it. Even Pittsburgh.
But you didn't count. You didn't actually go to Pittsburgh.
We can bicker over that.
I know I've told you guys this before, but my only trip as a child with my family was the longest road trip of my life. And I don't even care that it wasn't the longest in hours. It felt like the longest. We were in a tiny Cavalier. My sister, my mom was pregnant with my youngest little sister. My middle sister, and we get down to Florida and we go to Disney World on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And it was the worst trip of my entire life. I was, I don't know, 10, 11. It was horrible. They didn't plan anything. They didn't have any idea of what they wanted to do. And it kind of, I don't know, maybe that's why I have an over-planning problem. I can trace it right back to that.
Yeah.
Being on that trip and being there and being so miserable, you would never think that I would be able to fall in love with something mm-hmm. that I hated so much.
There's wisdom with age.
Yes. Well, I can't wait to go back and see the pile of rocks in Rome. I mean, you know, now that I have context and I have some historical knowledge, I definitely see what my mom thought was so appealing about it. But and I try, when we travel with the kids, I try to mentally prepare them for what we're really going to see and not just spring things on them or build it all up so that it's just, you know, when they get there, it's a letdown, because my perspective on it as an adult is different from what they will see, you know, different life experience. And I'm hoping that if nothing else, I'm just giving them the urge to travel when they get older,
yeah,
and so that they can experience those things and build their own life context. And to me, travel has been such a part of the fabric of who I am. You know, before I did this, I was a librarian for 20 years, and people think it was this huge career change, but honestly, I've been traveling my whole life. I've been, you know, mm-hmm, it's always been a priority for me. Whether it's to Disney World or across the world, it's always been a priority for me. And my parents gave me that, and I want to make sure I give my kids that. And I want to give my clients that as well. Nothing makes me happier than sending a family someplace they've never been before and seeing how they grow because of
it. I just had a couple go to Belize, and their pictures were, mm-hmm, awesome. All their descriptions of it, I was like, oh, this is a good one.
Yeah.
Especially when it, you know, even if it's a place that you've been 100 times and you see it fresh from their eyes for their first time, being able to make that moment special, being able to make that memory happen for them is addicting, and it's a huge part of why I love this, why I love my career.
Mm-hmm.
So. It's interesting because as we travel more and more, and I may be only speaking for myself, so you guys can correct me, but as we travel more and more, that anticipation goes away a little bit more because we're so busy planning other people's trips. But it's funny because now travel sneaks up on me, and it's even cooler because I'm like, oh my gosh, I get to go to this cool place tomorrow and I totally need to pack. You know, it's like I've been so focused on other people that I haven't thought about this trip. And now I get to go do this really cool thing. And
surprise trips.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And sometimes we do because we'll get last minute opportunities. So they are literally surprise trips that we didn't know 3 months ago we were going to do, or 3 weeks ago that we were going to do. And it's still so exciting. I talk to so many people who travel on business, and they, complain about travel because it's a chore and it's, you know, it's,
and they don't see anything, but
they're not getting to see anything, yeah. But we're very fortunate to be in a business where it is our business to see,
yeah,
the leisure side of travel
and meet the locals and usually have like a guide or something.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and if we didn't love it, if we didn't truly love it, I mean, I know I have a fear of flying and I really don't care for being in airports for a long period of time. So if I didn't really love it, there's no way I would be able to enjoy it this much or do it. You know, you kind of, it's, you fall in love with it and it becomes addicting. It is addicting because you want to see more and you want to experience more and you want to taste more of life.
Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to what Sandy was saying about, you know, some of her best memories have been when she traveled with family, mm-hmm, you know, because she's cementing those relationships, and it's, you know, kind of, you drive through all this area, you know, it's kind of like your fear of flying. You drive through all this country and you know, because you know what's waiting for you. You know that his family are there in those relationships, and that the more you travel, the more you're open to that mystery. You know, you were saying it sneaks up on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the more you're open to, something's going to be wonderful when I get there. You know, mm-hmm, it's whether you're going to visit people in Pittsburgh or whether you're flying off to Croatia at a moment's notice.
Mm-hmm.
You just know something's going to be, I'm going to be different, and something wonderful is waiting for me there.
Yep.
And I think no matter where you go, whether you drive there or fly there, or, you know, bike there or kayak there, however you get there, you know, and whether it's for a relationship or a new adventure or a last minute trip or, you know, a deal that you got for Disney, you know, something wonderful is waiting for you there.
Yep. And Donna, I think one of the things that I have admired about you is the way that, despite, because we've talked about this on our podcast before, how your luggage always gets lost, but but you come back from your trips going, that was a great trip. You know, I mean, most people will be like, I had nothing to wear for a week and a half.
She gets to buy new clothes.
But you do. You made the most of it. I think it's wonderful that as humans, we can choose that path and make the most out of a situation that might not have been ideal, but still.
Life gives you lemons. You add a little vodka and
that's right. And you go shopping.
You make the lemon drop.
Absolutely. Well, we are out of time. Otherwise, we would talk about this all,
yeah, really,
all night. So that is our show for this week. Thank you for hanging out with us for our 200th episode. We would love for you to share your life-changing travel moments with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Fly Away or from the podcast page on OutlanderTravel.com. Please be sure to subscribe to us and leave a review in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. On behalf of Laura, Sandy, Lindsay, Donna, and myself, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us this week, and we'll see you next time. Gotta fly!